Dear patrons, welcome back to BungaCast, the global politics podcast at the end of the end of history. I'm Alex Hochuli in São Paulo, Brazil. You probably knew that. And you also probably are aware of the fact that George Hoare is in London. And surprise, Philip Cunliffe is back in Canterbury after being away.
Hey. How's it going?
No, and welcome back, Phil, because like the last couple of episodes, at least we've recorded, has been just me or me and George. It's always
some excellent episodes.
They were missing, they were good, you know, but they were missing a certain something, you know. What was that something? What was that missing?
One of those things that makes something worse but is distinctive.
I don't know about that. I think it's maybe the thing that is called umami. It gives the flavor.
Umami.
Yes, I've been away, listeners. Those who follow me on Twitter, they might have seen I was traveling in the US for a couple of weeks, coast to coast. In fact, I was in San Francisco for an annual disciplinary convention that I used to attend almost every year. In fact, before lockdown. So it was good to be back. And then I kind of trailed my way back east, doing some academic work en route and ending up in Princeton to celebrate the retirement of Richard Tuck, leading constitutional and political theorist. And it was, in fact, it was great because unexpectedly, but happily en route, I met a whole bunch of listeners I haven't had the chance to meet before in various contexts, some in California. Nice. And some in Princeton. And that was great. And it was great to kind of chat face to face to our listeners because it's an opportunity that arises really. So that was fantastic.
Somebody recognized you by this kind of grating noise. And they were like, oh, no, I recognize that voice. That's Phil.
I think it was what they – I can't quite recall what they said, but it might have been something like the dulcet tones of this highly kind of highly polished transatlantic accent that nobody can quite place where it is, but clearly speaks to somebody who is well-informed and, you know, has an exotic and interesting background.
Well done on your PMC travels, avoiding the ghastly flyover country.
It was, unfortunately, it wasn't quite that PMC because it was economy class the whole way. So I did actually have to suffer for it. So, you know.
Well, the PMC only flies economy class now. You know, this is the downward. Anyway, while you were away in Europe, I mean, we have maybe touched on this in the past, but notably the NatCon conference in Brussels was shut down by police after they'd been forced to change venues a couple of times. And I think just a few days before that, the Palestine conference, a kind of pro-Palestine solidarity conference in Berlin, was also kind of shut down by police. So it's I find this stuff really shocking, especially because it's not like, you know, the usual kind of thing that we'd be used to in terms of shutting, you know, abridging or, you know, clamping down on rights in terms of association or freedom of expression or whatever would be like maybe Islamic extremists. And it seems to me like increasingly it's stuff which is fairly mainstream, which is being,
you know. I mean, but it's also like these were a lot of the NatCon conference was like major EU kind of politicians involved, you know, both at the national level and at the continental level. And that was actually the same in the Berlin thing as well. This was quite kind of, it was quite striking.
Yeah, Varoufakis was banned from like speaking in Germany, right? Yeah,
you know, like...
which I'm sure you were delighted about, Phil, because you're like, finally, they shut that guy up.
I don't support cracking down on Varoufakis' free speech. But if you wish to commit public harakiri as, you know, contrition for his terrible kind of effect on public life, the fate, the Greek people and European politics in general, he would have no objection from me. But
it's someone I invite him on the podcast actually to talk about techno feudalism. So
yeah, well, you know, let's see if he turns up. But yeah, we can say to Varoufakis quite happily that his free speech will be protected here. So if he's finding it a bit difficult in Germany and in the European Union that he worked so hard to defend and to prop up, you'll find perhaps some global podcasting land is a freer space. But this was, I mean, I know you wrote a piece on this, Alex, you know, but I suppose it's striking not only kind of the relative inoffensiveness, so to speak, of the, you know, Palestine solidarity and entirely kind of mainstream politics in the EU that was cracked down on, but also just, you know, across the Union as a whole, both ends of the political spectrum. And you know what? I mean, it's just a kind of a self-indictment of the European Union as a political project. You know, like looking from the outside in, why would anyone still think there's any kind of meaningful legitimacy in this institution that is descending into this kind of bizarre parody of centrist tyranny?
The alternative is fascism. That's it. You've got the EU of fascism.
Well, clearly that's what they think, right?
It's not obviously the EU in terms of an institution. It's not the EU institutions making this decision. It was like, you know, mayors in Brussels and the police and whatever. So it's like national level politics. So, but obviously the point is that it's within the context of the European Union and it's a whole edifice.
Yeah, but it's the same
politics.
It's the same kind of politics at work in both places, right? And Brussels is the capital of this completely kind of, you know, clapped out, crumbling empire. You know, they're not, I'm sure the local mayors in Brussels always have an eye to the supranational institutions in their city, not least because, you know, they'll have you know, the business kind of local economy will be dependent on them. And I'm sure they, you know, I'm sure they thought they were doing their friends down the road a favor.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm just drawing attention to what is actually more your point about the kind of Europeanization of national polities, right? So it's not like the EU is the EU over there in Brussels and it's these buildings or these structures, but it's something that it becomes part of nation states, like as they become member states. Anyway, but yeah, no, I think, as you say, it's fully kind of mainstream politics, and it makes me question what the nature of the transformations that will happen as a process continues, one that we've discussed, which is to say that as kind of national populists or national conservatives or whatever you want to call them, become increasingly part of, you know, part of the furniture, part of the regular alternation of political parties as they've become, you know, Italy, again, perfect example, where it's like just constantly flipping between some technocratic government come to rescue things and some populist government, which is the latest outrage, and the cycle goes on. Like that's becoming the kind of model of politics in the way that center left, center right alternation used to be for throughout the 20th century. Like if they're, you know, willing to shut down kind of main conference of the right side of that, right? The kind of the populists versus the technocrats. What is that? I mean, is that going to be a short-lived thing? Because increasingly as the kind of national conservatives become incorporated into the regular kind of running of European politics and indeed Western politics, how does that work? You know, like it like what I mean is that like it'll become normal. I think it'll become normalized. Whereas in the US, I think you still have something much more kind of dramatic that happens in the shift between the Democrats and the Republicans for all that they collectively form the kind of American ruling class and or represent the American ruling class collectively. So I don't know. Kind of ill-formed thoughts here, but
I'm not sure I kind of see the contrast with the States so clearly. But the in terms of how it plays out in Europe's future, I mean, it seems to me like it redounds to the benefit of the populace still. It is this kind of bizarre choreography because on the one hand, you know, they can claim, you know, as you made the piece in the Unheard response to the crackdown on the two conferences, you made this point, but like they, you know, it gives more legitimacy to their claims, the fact that they're seen to be so threatening. I mean, what struck me also was about it was billed as a sovereigntist conference. defending the sovereignty of the nation state was supposed to be the theme of a lot of the program of the NatCon conference, but none of it is about the practicalities of breaking up the European Union or seceding from the European Union.
Mm.
And so that seems to me to suggest it's heading the NAT, you know, which was, I mean, we've made this point before, but it seems to me worth saying again, they're heading in the direction of a kind of cultural understanding of sovereignty, which is to say something which is, you know, it's about protecting your national identity or something like that, rather than a project which is associated with the use of political power for specific national purposes.
Yeah, and so that makes it easier on them as well, because yes, then it can be a culture wars mobilization point, and you absolutely don't have the, you know, I'm trying to think what the analogy would be, but when you're talking about sovereignty, you know, you're going to be the ones paying the bill politically, i.e. there's no, I don't know, there's no evasion, or there's one fewer evasion. So,
yeah. No, absolutely. So I think that, you know, where does it go? It kind of carries on. The populace will be fortified by the technocratic assault. The technocrats will be on the back foot. They will need to accommodate and adapt. And, you know, this choreography between the two of them, their political interdependence will continue. Not least because the national conservatives are clearly completely unserious about leaving the European Union or breaking it up or about sovereignty itself. So nothing, I don't think it will kind of change the rhythm of European politics in any kind of meaningful way. It only shows that this pattern is deepening, I think.
No, absolutely. I guess the point is, when do we all, you know, acknowledge that this is theater, right? That this is that, and that the kind of dressing up will, you know, maybe the costumes will change, but that the what's going on remains the same.
Is it, you know, the same stage? Are there the same props?
Yeah, well,
Is it the same play? To extend the theater, I don't know if analogy. I can extend
the dramaturgical analogy. It's just pantomime. Far, but
that sort of theater, perhaps.
Well, yeah, but anyway, I think in the interest of being kind of ahead of things, I think it's important maybe then to restate this, the fact that it's like, okay, hang on, let's not get wrapped up into this drama, you know, to the extent that one could talk, you know, a decade ago about, you know, populists challenging the kind of order. Now we can see that, you know, how much this has been incorporated, which is something that we've discussed before, but I think it's worth continuing to make that point, and also to explore how it evolves. Right. Because there's obviously no kind of progressive or radical kind of politics that kind of emerge from this, at least from that kind of interface between technocracy and populism.
Hi there, friends. This is the end of a sample from an episode available only to subscribers at patreon.com/bungacast. For $7 a month, subscribers get at least 4 original exclusive episodes a month, featuring Alex, George, and Phil, as well as our regular contributors, Alex Gurevich, Amberly Frost, Catherine New, and Lee Phillips. We've got episodes on current affairs, extended interviews, exclusive episodes on theory, history, culture, docuseries, analyses of film, and our responses to listeners' questions and criticisms. And for $12 a month, you also get access to the very special BungaCast Reading Club, where we present the key books and essays necessary for understanding the world today, how we got here, and where we might be going. Of course, if you just want to try us out, there's also a $3 entry tier giving you one exclusive episode a month. We do hope you'll join us. These are turbulent times, and ideologically confused ones as well. We try to find some political clarity so that we might move beyond the age of Bunga Bunga.